Hello and welcome to the AV Forums podcast for Monday the 2nd of May. And joining me on this edition, our assistant editor, Steve Withers.
Sorry I'm late, I was saving the world. You know how it is.
News editor, Mark Hodgkinson.
I can't someone your own size.
And audio reviewer, Ed Selly.
Do I look like a monster?
Actually, those were quotes from Ant-Man. Well done. Well done, people.
Finally.
Had less death.
Yeah, and none to report, happily, this week. So,
oh, no, we've had some minor deaths, but no, you're right. We don't have a podcast distraction.
Yeah, people so minor are dying now that everyone's making a fuss about them just to try and make 2016 the year when every celebrity dies, basically. I was actually going to put on the running order, Phil, you know, we've had no deaths, but I thought, I don't want to tempt fate. I thought between yesterday and today, there'd be about 10 deaths otherwise. So.
A bloke from Heidi High died, but he was 78, and I didn't like Heidi High.
And some soul singer that I had never heard of. Apparently died.
I was like, okay, fair enough. Anyway, happy bank holiday, people. If you're tuning in on Monday when this podcast goes up, it is a bank holiday Monday, so I hope you're enjoying the sun.
I've just realised, again, we've taken a bit of a risk here that between recording and this podcast going up, nobody else dies. It was a quiet weekend.
Yeah, well, in terms of the weather's gone weird, really weird this week. I mean, at this present moment in time, it is heavy snow outside. No joking, it really is. Yeah, it's we're recording this on a Friday, it's payday, it's a bank holiday weekend. I know I'm old now because in the past that would have been, that would have just flagged up as a very long weekend. Nowadays, probably watch a film.
I might, and all the better for it, Phil, the better for it.
I might venture and get some popcorn to watch with the film. Anybody else up to anything for the bank holiday weekend?
I'm working. Well, tomorrow Kirsty is working at the musical theatre, which means I have the delights of my son all day. And given the time he's getting up in the mornings at the moment, that really is all day. Then I got my parents and my brother over on Sunday. Should be pleasant enough. And then Monday I've got to do some work.
Didn't you say on the last podcast that you'd have all the your reviews ready by now?
No, they're all done. I haven't actually uploaded them yet.
Yeah. Okay.
And I've even taken all the photos and edited the photos. It's simply, I have to be in a very special level of mental fortitude to play with a content management system. And at the moment, I am not in that mental state. So cool your jets. You'll get your reviews. Leave me alone.
I'm merely pointing out the fact that in last week's podcast, you said they would be there early.
Hang on. Sorry, my doorbell's just gone.
All right, well, while you sort that out, Hodge, up to anything at bank holiday?
No, absolutely nothing this weekend. In fact, I'm heading down next weekend is more of my excitement. I'm heading down towards Ed's neck of the woods in Milton Keynes. But this weekend's going to be...
well, that sounds exciting. Why?
I've got a friend who lives nearby and I've not seen him for years, so I'm going to go and visit him in Wingrave.
All right, so you're not going through choice to Milton Keynes?
No, we're just going through Milton Keynes. It's the nearest train station.
Yeah, basically. I think I'm going to go out sledging later.
Mm-hmm. Nice. You're going to go use like an old sack or something like that? or a tray.
The old tray trek, yeah.
Yeah, we've got snow now. The latest update is just coming down.
What a lovely end to April as we record this. Obviously, you're listening to this beginning of May. This year has flown by. So move the things on and let's look at current competitions because I'm really hoping there's a winner this week. But first of all, what can we win, Hodge?
You can win a copy of Labyrinth on Blu-ray, and that's open to all members until the 9th of May. And then there's a copy of Hustlers. You can go and read the review if you want a laugh. And that's open to active members until the 20th of May. And then there's a Mega Pump Audio headphones giveaway, totaling £614 in prizes. And that's open to all members until the 22nd of May.
Go on then. Competition winner.
We really do. We have one. And that is Nick Etheridge, who won Mad Max Fury Road on Ultra HD Blu-ray. Well done, Nick.
5-star reviews. Captain Boring. I'm willing to leave a 5-star review knowing it will never be read out because Phil won't remember. In your face, Captain Boring.
Boom. Drop the mic. Leave the stage.
Yep. Exit stage right.
Niall Nom says, just discovered this and really enjoyed the last show. Presenters are knowledgeable and the tone is just right.
Mandalay 34, this podcast is great. I enjoy the team discussions on home entertainment news and usually agree with the reviews.
Usually.
Fair enough.
Got pointed there. Thanks, Mandalay.
Colin G, 1307, a real good listen for anyone interested in home cinema or anything audiovisual. I genuinely look forward to my weekly fix of news, reviews, updates and general chat. Well, I'm proud to supply the general chat bit of that. So
that would be you. Monster of Glasgow, quality bants really does describe this informative, jovial and addictive podcast. Although hosted by experts, thank you very much, they never make the listener feel excluded.
What podcast is he listening to?
I don't know.
He's left me back on the wrong one there.
Heed the bar. So refreshing to hear experts talk in an accessible way without dumbing down. Again, what are you listening to? Love the name Heed the Bull. Brilliant. And I'm the only one that can say it right on this podcast.
You are, yes. I'm assuming that Heed the Bull is from Scotland, from north of the wall, where it's snowing.
Yeah, where winter never ends. Right.
Winter is most definitely coming by the looks of it. Did you watch GOT, Ed?
I did. Did you listen to that link I sent you?
I did, and now all I can ever hear is Peter Dinklage. Thanks a lot for that.
You're very welcome. That replaces the South Park version where they're just singing about wieners. So in many regards, I've actually had my Game of Thrones tune experience marginally improved, but everyone else has now had it made significantly worse.
Ed, Mark, did you catch up?
Yeah, I caught it up on Now TV. Yeah, I was really impressed. Good episode, really, a nice opening. Yeah,
well, the first season openers are always relatively restrained, aren't they? I thought they managed to get back into things relatively well, so yeah.
I'd not forgotten everyone's name, like I expected I would as well. I'd normally completely forgotten what's going on and everyone's name, but it just got me straight back in there. It was good.
I rewatched season 5 before over the weekend, last weekend, and that was a bit of a holding season, wasn't it?
hang on. Where are you getting all this time to watch the whole of season 5 in a weekend? I've got 1-4 and the 5 box set sitting here, and I'm proud to say I haven't seen any of it yet.
Well, I was multitasking, Phil, because I also had the
that's what they call it,
various eh? equipment being used at the same time.
And that's his story, and he's bloody well sticking to it.
That's more to the point, I was on my own for most of the weekend, so the opportunity arose and I took it. When you get round to seeing Game of Thrones, you'll understand that's quite an appropriate phrase. Have you ever watched the Honest trailers? Don't, by the way, yet, Phil, because you always full of spoilers, but they're always going, boobs, and there are quite a lot of boobs in and bums, for that matter.
Lovely. Okay, let's get on to why we're here and what we're here to talk about. And that is hardware news. So Sony have announced that the VW320, which at the last communication, they are not sending it for review, which is why we haven't covered it. But they are now updating it for HDR, so we may actually get to see it.
Yeah, because I mean, originally they weren't sending it out because essentially it was the same as the VW300, at least in terms of specs. And so I'm not sending out for review because it's basically the same projector. And now it's doing HDR, so I guess it is different from the VW300 and worthy of reviewing. So it'll be interesting to see how that performs.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, now that we are starting to get the equipment through and we've now got the testing equipment and so on, we do intend to get these items in for review if we can, as well as the 520 and the X7000. And the X5000 from JVC, that review is going to get updated by you as well, Steve, because you now own one and you've got all the equipment to test the HDR and that kind of thing.
I'm just going to mute this for a second. I can hear the cat meowing outside the door, so I'm going to preempt her by stuffing some biscuits down and actually keep her occupied and out of my way. Hang on a second.
Yeah, so we'll be getting those projectors and some other displays that went through before we had the full HDR testing facilities. We'll be getting them back through and be retesting everything. So keep your eye out on the reviews. Moving on swiftly, Mr. Portwright's not here this week, but Nintendo, which is his favourite games company, confirmed the NX launch date. Mark, tell us more about this.
Yeah, it came out as usual through a financial report. So they confirmed in that, for our dedicated video game platform business, Nintendo is currently developing a gaming platform codenamed NX, which we've known about since 2015, with brand new concept, and it will be launched in March 2017 globally. They're not showing it at E3, which is in June 2014. It will be getting
It's in the past, is it?
June 14th. Sorry.
No, that would be impressive if they could do that.
It's got time-travelling capabilities. This is a brand new concept, after all. It's not shown at E3, but they will be showing off one of its launch titles, or its major launch title, which is the new Legend of Zelda game, which was going to be a Wii U exclusive, but obviously push that back. Now, I was going to feel a little bit indignant as a Wii U owner that they're ditching it ahead of time, but then I checked their release dates for the GameCube, the Wii, and the Wii U, and they've kind of got a 5 or 6 year window in between it. So I can't be too indignant about that. We don't know a lot about it, of course. It's rumoured to be based on the same architecture as the PS4 and Xbox One, and depending on which rumours you listen to, it's either slightly more powerful or slightly less powerful than the PS4. It's going to have reportedly a brand new control concept, much like they did with the Wii and the Wii U, so it'd be interesting to see that. We've seen some leaked photos of a controller that was about 6-7 months ago. These came out, which looks semi-interesting. It's just got a couple of thumbsticks and a screen, so it's obviously heavily based on touch, if that's going to be true. And other than that, we know very little.
We're 1.5 racing through this hardware news, so I think we better hand it over to Steve to fill
slow
in the
next. Slow it all down.
Yeah. Well, no, he doesn't talk slowly. It'll be at 100 miles an hour, but it'll fill the next 20 minutes. So, Steve, you've been looking at the Anthem MRX 1120. The review's up on the site. Just give us your final thoughts.
Yeah, it's Anthem's new flagship receiver. The 11 in the 1120 name refers to the number of built-in channels. So 11 channels of built-in amplification, which basically means this is a one-box shop. If you want a full immersive 7.1.4 setup, you can do it from a single box, which is obviously quite convenient and involves less cabling and not having to buy additional amplification. So in that sense, great news. A lot of people complained about the price when it was announced. It's £3,999. Now, I think those complaints stem from two things. First of all, previously, Anthem has always been really good value. They have delivered some amazingly performing receivers at some quite impressive pricing. This is less so impressive, and people have been comparing it to the price in the US. I think it's $3,999, but you could say that there's a certain amount of margin being taken by the distributor in this country, but there's also issues like exchange rates, and I know that being a Canadian company, they've struggled with that recently, so that's part of the reason why they haven't been able to deliver receivers that are quite competitive in terms of pricing. But I don't think that $399 is a lot to ask for, you know, a flagship receiver with 11 channels of built-in amplification and support for Dolby Atmos and DTSX. It seems that's a reasonable price when you would pay £4,299 for the Arcam AVR 850, which has Dirac Live but only has 7 channels of built-in amplification. So I think it's quite reasonable. Plus, it also comes with Anthem Room Correction, which, if you've read previous reviews of Anthem receivers, will know is a system that we really like. I think it's a very powerful tool. It's a very flexible tool. And I really like the fact that it's got a graphical interface, so you can see the measurements before and the measurements after, and the target curves and what it's doing. I really like that fact. It's also got a really handy little thing called Quick Measure, which just basically allows you to measure a speaker, any speaker, but it's really handy for measuring the sub if you want to move it around the room to try and find the best spot for it. So that's a really powerful tool. It's got Dolby Atmos already. It's got 11 channels of built-in amplification. It will be adding DTSX with a firmware update in the summer. So I think, that's a pretty good all-round deal. Now, Anthem receivers, they aren't the prettiest receivers in the world. You know, they're not going to be winning any awards for designs like, say, maybe the Yamaha or Denon or Pioneer. And they aren't as solidly built as some of the other manufacturers as well. But I think performance-wise, first of all, the numbers they quote for power for the built-in amplification, I think they actually use realistic numbers. So whilst it may not always seem as impressive as some of the competition, they aren't talking about one channel being driven to the point of exploding. So in my experience, when I actually listen to them, you think, well, yeah, that's actually quite powerful and can hit a nice volume level without becoming brittle or harsh. So I think they're well-powered, they're well-made to a price point. They have plenty of features that you want. I mean, their features are very much based upon audio and video. So, you're talking about things, important things like HDMI 2.0a. So you've got full future-proofing there in terms of your inputs and outputs for HDMI. You've got the immersive audio formats and high-quality DACs. You know, it's about audio and video. It's not really about all the bells and whistles that a lot of other manufacturers put on their receivers, which are really about ticking boxes for marketing. You'll probably find that 90% of the things on your receiver you won't actually use, whereas people like Anthem and Arcam as well, to a certain degree, they're talking about delivering receivers that are designed to perform well and to hit a certain performance level. And I think they do that. And I found the MRX 1120 to be a great receiver. I mean, aside from the aside from the convenience of having one box, it sounded great. ARC worked wonders in my room, which it always does. All over, it was a fantastic receiver. My one complaint, and it's a pretty big complaint. New this year, they've got built-in Wi-Fi, but it wouldn't connect to a BT Home Hub, either via wired or wireless connection. And given that's probably the most common router in the country, that's a bit of a cock-up on their part. It also apparently won't work with Virgin either, which is probably the second most common one in this country. Now, I appreciate they're a Canadian company, and they tested them with all the routers in the States, but they need to sort that out quickly, because that's a bit of a, you know, bit of an issue. Because it made setting up ARC really difficult, because my laptop doesn't have an Ethernet port, so I couldn't do a direct connection. So I had to get hold of another router in order to do it, which was a bit of a pain in the ass. Because even if you don't want to use the streaming aspects of wireless connection, you do need the wireless connection to the network in order to actually run ARC. So that sort of minor point, or maybe major point, depending on how you look at it, aside, performance-wise, it was a great receiver. Really, really good sounding receiver. Worked really well. Movie's fantastic. Also very musical. I thought it sounded really nice with music too. So if you're looking for something that can do movies and music, Anthem's always been a good choice for that as well.
Steve, do you feel... I mean, obviously, we had this conversation some weeks back where I felt that Arcam's approach of not slapping every single amplifier into the chassis, because not everyone is going to go full Atmos straight away, I think it had dividends. Do you feel, does anything come across as compromised with having 11 amps in it? I mean, how hot does it run? Does it feel a bit sort of compresses the back panel sensibly laid out, stuff like that?
What they've essentially done on the back panels, they've removed a lot of the unnecessary connections. So they've cleaned it up quite a bit, which I agree with, which means that it's not, it's not too busy or cluttered at the rear. It wasn't running too hot. In terms of building the amplification in, it didn't seem to be compromised in any way. And I guess if you're looking for a single box solution, your options are fairly limited at the moment. You've got the choice of either the Anthem or currently, I think, the Onkyo NR3030, is it? That's an 11-channel. I think maybe there's another one coming from Onkyo soon. But there's not many around. So if that's the solution you really want, this would be an excellent choice. Clearly, if you're happy to add additional amplification, then there are a lot of other alternatives. There's plenty of flagship 9-channel AV receivers, excellent ones like the A3050 from Yamaha or the X7200 from Denon. You could go for the AVR850, which we discussed at length when I reviewed that. But as I say in the review, if you're looking for an alternative, definitely consider the AVR550 from Arcam. That has Dirac Live, 7 channels of built-in amplification, not Class G, but still very good amplification. And it's, I think it's £2,300. So you can get an awful lot of additional amplification for another £1,700. So that's certainly going to be an alternative. And in terms of comparing Dirac to ARC, ARC does EQ the overheads, which Dirac currently doesn't. But I'm not sure that makes a lot of difference in terms of real-world experience.
I think it would make very little difference.
Little, yeah. Whereas I love the way that Dirac not only EQs the speakers, but also works on things like the impulse response. So I found that ultimately Dirac is a little bit more sophisticated and did a slightly better job in my room, particularly when it came to handling sort of around 50, 60 hertz. Did a really good job there.
And of course, you haven't got the BT Home Hub issue either, have you?
Well, there is that too, although that doesn't have any wireless capability. It's just a wired connection. The only thing I will say, though, is to get the best out of Dirac Live, you need to use a calibrated microphone, which the receiver doesn't come with. And you can either buy one or your dealer can come around with one and do the setup for you. What I do like about Anthem is in the box, not only have you got 11 channels in that receiver, it comes with its own calibrated mic and a mic stand, so you can run the setup yourself with Anthem Room Correction. And I think that's quite a nice little touch too, which I've always really liked about Anthem. So, it's definitely a single box solution for anyone who wants to get a really good performance out of their room. But there are alternatives. And if I was thinking of buying a receiver right now, I certainly would be considering the Arcam AVR550, because for that kind of price, getting Dirac Live as well is a real bonus.
Can't argue with that.
I also discovered when writing the review that there was a bit of room for confusion when it occurred to me that ARC can also be audio return channel.
Yeah.
We are running out of acronyms. If you want it to be something pronounceable phonetically, which means you've got to get a vowel in there somewhere, your options are increasingly tight.
So, I mean, it's interesting that in terms of Room EQ, there seems to be a lot of movement. I mean, it used to be that Odyssey was everywhere. Odyssey Multi EQ or Mult EQ. There's various flavours of that. Interestingly, Onkyo dropped that Odyssey a number of years ago now, maybe 2 years ago. And that had quite an effect on their business, actually, by dropping that EQ system from their product line. Now we've got Dirac. Now, Dirac used to be exclusively on the high end. You're talking about £10,000 and above in terms of AV processors that came with that technology. Now, there are standalone Dirac units that you could add into the system, but actually, in terms of AVRs, I understand that Arcam are actually the first to, I was going to say budget, but actually get an affordable level with that. And then you have ARC, and I'm trying to think if I'm missing any others out there, actually.
There's Yamaha do YPAO.
And Pioneer have got MCACC.
Talking about...
about quality acronyms all over the place.
In terms of Pioneer, I've never heard that. In terms of the Yamaha, I'm not really a fan because it doesn't handle the bottom end very well. In fact, it doesn't handle the bottom end. Anything under 40 hertz, and it just doesn't do it. There's no filter there. So I'm not a huge fan of that. In fact, I'm not a big fan of EQ because what I found is, obviously, I've been using my room for 15 years. It's now set up the way it should be set up. I've had years of trial and tribulation and putting in things that help to balance the room out and sort the room out. So the room, it works the way it should work. There's plenty of treatment in there. I know where to place speakers to get the best out of the room without getting over the top issues or anything. But I understand that not everybody's room's like that, and the more square your room, the more trouble you're going to have. So I understand where these EQ systems come in and where they can be handy. I guess I'm in the camp of, if you can get the room and treat it a certain way, and let's face it, if it's a living room or whatever, you're kind of limited to heavy curtains and rugs and so on, and furniture to basically do everything that you want to do, in bookshelves and so on, placed next to the surround speakers. And yeah, you know, there are tricks that you can use in a lounge to make it treat the room in a certain way, but it's harder to do. If you've got a dedicated room, then you can basically treat it properly right from the start and use bass traps and diffuser panels and all that kind of, and you don't have to dress them up. You can cover them in material or something like that, or just stick them straight onto the wall if it's a dedicated room that's going to have the lights all switched off and all the rest of it. And there's plenty of, you know, studio in a box type things that you can buy to treat rooms and so on. Now, that the downside to that is that making it look nice and designing it into the room, that's a lot more work than having an EQ system built into an AVR. So I get how they're popular. I mean, I tested the first Odyssey EQ system back in 2006, 2007. It was the Odyssey Pro unit, came with a Pro microphone, and it was the first time it had ever been seen, that type of technology. It was way before it ever turned up in any AVRs, and that genuinely impressed me for what it was at the time and what it did and all the rest of it. Now, that unit that I reviewed now comes in the X6200 from Denon's, probably more powerful than that original Pro unit, in terms of the processing and the DSP and all the rest of it. So it's certainly moved on, and with the likes of Dirac and so on, you're getting some really powerful systems, because with Dirac, you're talking about supercomputer processing.
Yeah, they actually dialed into a supercomputer in Sweden to run the actual calculations for the processing. So
yeah,
that's some serious power being, you know, processing power being used there for that system, which is obviously the difference with ARC. ARC runs off your laptop, whereas Dirac actually dials in. So that is another difference of the two.
Yeah. So when it comes to the power of the processor and what they're actually doing in the calculations and so on, I mean, that's great. The other thing is that it's to reduce rather than boost. You know, you should never be boosting in an EQ system, because you're going to run out of headroom very quickly and you're going to cause damage to your speakers and so on, which in the early days was one of the major problems that people didn't get their head around, and it did cause damage and so on, because people were trying to, you know, if there was a dip at 60, they were trying to amplify that out and causing all sorts of issues. Whereas it's more about reducing everything around that and giving it a little bit more headroom to try and get the signal properly. And like you say, you know, the way that signals are processed now, the way that Dirac do it, is completely different to ARC, is completely different to Odyssey in most situations. So there's quite a bit of flavour there. But I understand why it exists, but I think I'm more in Ed's camp in this one, which is unusual, because we normally don't agree on certain things. Unless it's really, really clever, I don't see much point for EQ. I'd rather treat the room.
I think there's something in that. I think there's two ways of looking at this. I mean, My recent experiences with Dirac on the SR250 were genuinely impressive, but they did open up a bit of a can of worms, in so much as Dirac is sufficiently powerful. It's a case of, and when there's only two speakers, it's a case of, okay, well, these are clearly things that the room is doing, so we can dial that out. But okay, also we've got this lift that's very clearly been designed into the loudspeakers. And, you know, I've chosen those loudspeakers subconsciously with them doing, having this lift present and dialing that out. I mean, actually, I have to be honest, it wasn't quite so significant a change as I thought it might be, but nonetheless, with two channel especially, and the more sort of subjective nature of how a lot of those items perform, are you correcting the room, or are you correcting design or modifying design decisions made when the product was designed in the first place, which is a bit peculiar?
Yeah.
I would say it's very important, sort of room correction and auto setup, because the two are inexorably linked. A number of people don't necessarily make too much assumption of what the system is going to do in terms of room correction, but they do appreciate the fact that it's broadly going to get something approximating a correct pattern and behavior out of the loudspeakers in the room. It did significantly change the market, so we can't underestimate that. A number of people who might not have been happy about the idea of buying an AV receiver and sort of wandering around, pacing around with an SPL meter and so on and so forth, the moment that these amplifiers started to have at least a stab of getting themselves set up, it did make them more accessible, although that in turn spelt lean times for specialist AV dealers, who all of a sudden the public got it into their heads that no further assistance from them was required. So they are they've been extremely important. I mean, I do basically agree with you. I want to stand on the right side of criticism and being litigious. I've never found Audacy to be terribly convincing. I was impressed with Dirac. I've never heard the Anthem system, but enough people who I believe to be not insane have said that it's pretty good, so I'll take your word for it. But yeah, I mean, from my perspective,
thank you, Ed.
Well, you're very welcome. I just, as I say, for multi-channel, I mean, I'm quite lucky in so much as I have small sealed loudspeakers attached to solid walls. So these days, actually, even if you run full correction in the room, the amount of adjustment that the amplifier makes is actually commendably negligible. And by simply having the subwoofer in a recognized sweet spot, it's not too hard to sort of dial it in without too much recourse to heavy processing. But I appreciate that that's a relatively fortunate position to be in.
I mean, like everything else, it has to be used sparingly, is my opinion. You know, throwing the speakers just generally anywhere in a room, and then running the auto EQ and auto setup and all the rest of it, and then expecting brilliant results, it ain't going to happen. You still have to do the basics correct. You still have to set the room up correctly. You still have to put the speakers in the right places to get the right effects. If you actually spend the time doing things properly, setting things up properly, measuring properly, and making sure that you've got certain treatments in the room that are going to be desirable without getting in the way of the other half and you know, becoming an issue in terms of looks, and then running the EQ, if the EQ's got less to do, it's going to be more beneficial. It's not over-processing, and it's fixing the little things that adding treatment into the room and so on, where it's not possible, it'll fix those little things. But you've got to start with a decently set up system to start with. And I think that has to be stage one. You know, don't just throw the speakers anywhere in the room or, you know, and then expect miracles, because it ain't going to happen. Not even with the best systems in the world, it ain't going to happen.
No, and if you are stretched for placement, as I say, just relating back there, since switching to infinite baffle wall-mounted inert cabinet speakers, that makes your life a great deal easier. So if you are sort of looking at floor space and going, that's not so good, then genuinely you're likely to get better results out of a subsat based arrangement. That doesn't necessarily mean it has to be cheap, but I mean, so decent small loudspeakers underpinned by a well-positioned subwoofer may end up being a more sympathetic operation and certainly easier to get going in certain rooms.
That's always been the way that I've seen things, Ed. I mean, I know you're sometimes a polar opposite to me on that, but that's always the way I've been. You know, subsat, start with subsat. You know, and the more subs, the better, actually, depending on the shape of the room. But more subs, the better. Good satellite speakers. Get them positioned correctly. Do as much correction as you can yourself in terms of treating the room and making sure that everything is in the ideal positions within the room. Then run your EQ.
Yeah. The more issues you can eliminate through sensible setup and configuration, the better. But I think Ed's point is about in the past, people have perhaps not so much the enthusiasts, but more the general public have been somewhat afraid of AVRs because they seem complex and difficult to set up. And these setup systems now and auto EQ systems have certainly made them more accessible to the mass market than they've ever been before. But don't think of them as being a universal, they're not a universal cure for every ill. The more you can do in sensible setup, the better the results will be, both in terms of, so I ran the Anthem, just basic setup, setting up myself without any ARC for a few weeks because I couldn't get ARC to work initially because I couldn't connect to the receiver. That, it's still a great performance if it's just set up properly. But I know in my room, I have a real problem at 50 hertz. And I've tested, one of the great things about these systems is that because you can see the graphs, actually show you the measurements of each speaker. I know there's a difficult problem to solve just through placement. And EQ does come in quite handy for that. Without resulting to complete room treatments. So, there are definitely benefits, but the more you can do through sensible setup, the better.
Oh, yeah, totally. And it's like anything else like that, You start with a decent ground level and then work your way up. And although I've said I'm not a big fan of these, it's only because I've spent 15 years getting this room absolutely bang on right. And even still, it's not flat because I don't like ruler flat. And there seems to be this goal of everything should be ruler flat, like it was in an anachronic chamber. That is not the end goal, people. You have to have a house curve. You have to, that's where you get the character, the sound. That's where you get the interaction, which is a good interaction with the room. We're not talking about running subs hot and all the rest of it, or the room is going to have an influence because what you basically got is speaker drivers in a box in another bigger box, which is your room. And in another bigger box, which is the rest of the house. And, you got waveforms running around it all over the place and so on. You're never going to get around that. You're never going to do anything by treating the room to stop that other than building a room within a room on rubber rubber bases or like what they did at Galaxy Studio, Steve, and all the concrete rooms were on springs to isolate them. You're never going to do that. Yeah. You're never going to go to that kind of length. But the room will always have an influence, even with EQ running and so on. But it's using the room, it's using the influence, it's using the character of the room, and it's producing that character to the sound. And Ed, you hit on the nail when it comes to hi-fi. The thing that people, the vast majority of the time, is they're not looking for accuracy. I think I'd be really accurate in saying that. They're not looking for ruler flat accuracy. You're looking for character, warmth, and presentation.
Well, sometimes warmth, sometimes people are looking for a level of aggression from audio systems, which is considerably in advance of what you might consider to be accurate. Do bear in mind that although I'm pleased to say that we are getting some fresh meat through the door, a number of owners, especially with high-end systems, they are in their 60s, 70s, 80s. So the systems have a presentation which is essentially compensating for, standard hearing loss over time. So if you sit down and listen to them under the age of 40, you can think, bloody hellfire, that just isn't right. But if you're, quite a lot older than that, all of a sudden it is. So that's actually casts a very long shadow on how a lot of equipment is voiced but
of course,
and set up.
Of course, exactly how equipment is voiced. I could tell you B&W against a KEF, for example. Because you get so used to the sound characteristics from the company and they build that into the products that they use. So, when we're talking about room EQ and all the rest of it, you're talking about trying to flatten off the response and so on. But I think where people go too far is they think that everything should be ruler flat and that's the goal. No, I would argue with that. That is never the goal. The goal is never to be completely so accurate that it's like you're in an anachronic chamber. That's not what we're looking for.
I would say that one of the speakers that's going to crop up on my reviews this month, and it is written and it is photos, it isn't uploaded yet, it'll be there, it's the descendant of the original BBC compact monitor loudspeaker. And it has been evolved. So there are certain differences, but it is fundamentally still an extremely accurate loudspeaker. It's been a very, very interesting experience to spend some time with it, actually. I won't sort of spoil the gist of the review, but it really is one of those items where I don't think it's going to be for everyone, not least because it's tiny and it's a sealed box loudspeaker. So there are obviously going to be implications to the amount of bass it produces. But I do sense that for a number of people, it might not be the obvious sort of thing that you'd be looking for when you want to spend £1,000 on a loudspeaker. But I do sense that a number of people are going to listen to it. And after that, almost nothing else is going to sound right, because these do have exceptional tonal accuracy. And it has a very interesting effect on how you listen to music, and indeed the music that you listen to.
I covered this a number of podcasts ago, and it's still something that sticks in my mind and basically makes me feel better about loudspeakers and performance from loudspeakers. And that was the fact that when we were at Galaxy Studios, Steve, we stood in a large recording room, probably the same size as Studio One at Abbey Road, about that size, the same height and all the rest of it. And it was a full orchestra in there. And we were stood in that room while the orchestra played the same music cue for a musical twice. And the sound pressure and the fact that this orchestra was standing right in front of us was absolutely astounding. And then we went into the control room where they were recording this, and we're talking about hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of Genelec speaker system in that room, huge mixing desk where they were actually recording from analog to digital, and it sounded nothing like how it was sounded in the soundstage just next door. There is no way that you can reproduce that sound the way it is from a full orchestra. There is absolutely no, it doesn't matter how good a recording equipment you have, how good the microphones are and all the rest of it. There's just something about the weight and the authority and the movement of air that you can just never capture from a loudspeaker. And that made me feel so good about loudspeakers. And, you know, let's get away from, well, it's so accurate and all this. You'll never get that accuracy. You'll never move that amount of air. It'll never sound the same. You can get close, but you're still a million miles away, in my opinion, even though you're getting close.
No, I think that's why ultimately people tend to choose loudspeakers where they just like the sound for whatever reason.
Exactly. It's so subjective, and there's going to be a lot of people listening to this podcast that are going to vehemently disagree with what we're saying because they have their idea of what something should sound like, and they have their personal preference. And it's not like talking about video and talking about UHD and 4K and all the rest of it, where there are industry standards that say white should look like this and red should look like that, and, you know, the brightness should be this and the gamma curve should do that. There's none of that when it comes to audio. The only thing you have is guidelines from people like Dolby and DTS and so on for multi-room systems and multi-channel setups and ideally where you should be positioning speakers. But apart from that, and some advice about crossovers and so on, there are
You've
no standards.
You've got the RIAA curves. I mean, they date back to the 60s.
But in terms of, you know, looking at video compared to audio, yeah, you know, there are no standards, and it is such a subjective medium. It really is so subjective. So getting it back to the EQ systems, they have their uses. Please don't just throw things in a room and then expect it to work miracles, because it won't happen like that. You've got to put the work in to set the room up. And I know a lot of forum members and a lot of our listeners will have spent a vast amount of time researching, moving speakers around their room, actually doing physical testing with it themselves, the old subwoofer trick, you know, put the subwoofer in the seating position and walk around the room and all. I know people have done that, and I know people still do that. And even though it's completely not totally scientific, it's usually a good way.
It's quite a handy trick, actually.
Yeah, of finding where a good placement would be and all the rest of it. And in terms of accuracy, you're never going to get accuracy when it comes to sound, because there are no standards that say what accurate is. And like I say, you can have an experience like standing in front of a full orchestra, and you will never be able to replicate that.
I think it's probably worth remembering, you know, the single biggest impact on the sound of you'll hear is the room itself. So before you spend tons of money on new speakers or go and look at Anthem, Room Correction, or Dirac, whatever, the simplest thing to do, and by far probably the cheapest approach, is to first of all address any issues in the room itself. If you can do that first, I mean, I know it's always, you know, possible. It depends on the room and, you know, what other, you know, we're always making compromise. Unless it's a dedicated home cinema or something like that, built from scratch, there's always going to be a degree of compromise. But the first approach should always be to try and address any obvious issues in the room.
Yeah.
Speaker placement, of course, maybe trying to match the speakers so they tonally match from the start. Those kind of things you can do before you start looking at, you know, thinking, shall I buy a 20 grand set of speakers? Because they might still sound crap in your room unless you do something about the room itself.
No, totally. And it's why I spent the time in the room that I have, and I know that you've spent the time in your room, and Ed, it'll be the same. It's, you know, when we're assessing this stuff and reviewing this stuff, you want as little influence from the room as possible.
Yeah.
Because you want to hear what the product actually does and how the product actually works. And there's the other flip of the coin, well, how does it perform in different rooms? And you should be testing in different rooms. And we'll do that as much as we can in the limits that we have. But it's just room EQ is great, but it's like you say, Steve, it's further down the list. You know, get the room first. You know, and like I said, you're talking about a box within a box within a box. And you got to think about how those speakers are interacting with the room and what effects you're getting. And there are loads and loads of little tips and tricks, which hopefully we're going to go through in the next few months with Sound Advice and show people little tricks that they can use within the rooms, like the correct placement of a bookshelf next to your rear speakers to create diffusion on the rear speakers.
Yeah. Or a rug or some curtains or some furnishings are often excellent ways of absorbing reflections you don't want. Just putting a comfy chair in the right place, a reflection point on the wall, could help you out. You know, these are simple little tricks that aren't going to be intrusive into the environment and won't really cost you any money either.
Yeah, and just being middle-aged. As a pro tip, soft furnishings also make a room much more comfortable as well.
Yeah.
If you've been sat there cross-legged on the floor listening to your home cinema system, you will be amazed at the difference that a sofa makes, and not just solidly.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with the sofa is, Ed, that you lie down and then before you know it, you never get through a whole film. Or your cinema chairs are that comfy that you fall asleep in.
I used to have a pair of those lazy boy, you know, easy chairs that lean back, and a number of times I used to wake up at 4 a.m.
I still do it now. The couch in the living room. You know, a good example, somebody said, why did you publish the podcast at 3 a.m. on a Monday morning? Well, the reason was, it was the Masters, last day of the Masters, and I always watch the last day. I'm not that interested with the rest of the week, but always watch the last day because of the drama. Because usually whoever's in the lead will fluff it and drop it, and which is what normally happens and so on. So I actually sat down at 11, I think it was 10:30, 11 o'clock, never saw the Masters, woke up at 3 in the morning.
Just to let you know, that's exactly what happened though.
Yeah.
Someone did completely blow it.
Yeah, I found that out in the morning, but yeah, it's normally why I watch the last day. Anyway, we digress. That's our look at Room EQ and so on. If you've got hints, tips, if you disagree vehemently with what we're saying, let us know. Let us know your experiences and so on with sound speakers and EQ and setting your room up and all the rest of it, and let us know what you want to know more about. Like we say, we're going to have Sound Advice. It kicked off on Friday, if you're listening to this podcast on Monday, and the first one was from Ed. It was a hi-fi article. Very quickly, Ed, because we don't want to spoil it for people. We actually want people to go and read the article, but just give us a very brief what they'll find in the first article based on hi-fi sound advice.
Yeah, this is the overview. This is the intro piece to everything else that we're going to be covering. We are absolutely sort of starting at the basics. What can you describe to be a hi-fi system? What are the constituent parts of that? How do they work? And you know, what are you looking to achieve? And just at the end, we have a little moment where we discuss whether that includes one systems that are all in one chassis, or whether it's specific to things that have more than one chassis. I don't want to spoil too much other than that. I would just say that we live in interesting times for hi-fi, so don't automatically assume that just because it doesn't look like a normal hi-fi system that it can't be a hi-fi system, because all of the rules are out of the window now, and we will be covering all of that, and it's going to be an interesting one. But it's no longer a case of it has to be three big boxes and some speakers and so on and so forth. So, you know, keep with it, and we'll try and get you all set up for some audio bliss.
So that's for hi-fi. Don't worry, AV fans. We are going to cover the whole gamut of AV stuff as well. It's just it's far more involved, and we'll take a little bit longer to get everything together and get it published. So hi-fi is going to be first. Like Ed said, this is the first article. Going to have a read, and we should have one a month for the next few months anyway, running up to the AV side of things as well. And if you look at our video reviews and so on for audio products, if there are little tips that we can give within the reviews, then the little sound advice badge will pop up in the video to tell you that this is a little bit of advice. And the first one is ARC in a soundbar review, and we'll also do separate videos covering all those subjects as well and telling you how to set systems up and all the rest of it. And that's going to run probably well into next year. There's just so much to get through. But that is the AV Forum's sound advice. We're starting with hi-fi. We're going to move on to AV. And hopefully we're going to cover everything to do with sound and setting up your system and little tips and tricks and video tutorials and all that kind of thing. So that's coming up. And coming next, we'll actually have a movie review.
Yay!
So, Steve, what's at the cinema?
Well, I'm about to review Captain America Civil War because it was a midnight screening, midnight on Thursday night, recording this on a Friday. So I was up till about 4 a.m. watching Captain America Civil War, and I have to say I thoroughly enjoyed it. This is definitely one of the big releases of the year. Although it's called Captain America Civil War, really it's more of an Avengers film. Almost the entire Avengers cast are in the film aside from the Hulk and Thor. And there's a couple of new characters. I won't go into details, I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say that they're excellent, and one of them in particular is really well handled by Marvel, as opposed to the other studio that was handling it. They've done a deal together, basically, to bring this character in, and I thought they did a fantastic job, and it's a real lesson to DC on how to do a superhero movie, particularly a big team-up movie. It's well made, it's entertaining, it's fun, but serious as well in places. It has great action, a real-world sensibility, but also a good comic book sensibility. Is it the best Marvel film so far? No, I still think that Captain America Winter Soldier retains the award for best Marvel film, but it's very close. It's certainly very similar in terms of tone, but obviously this has a lot more comic book characters in it than that film did. Is it the most enjoyable? Probably not. I still think Guardians of the Galaxy is the most fun Marvel movie that's been made so far. But again, it is very enjoyable. It does brilliantly, and this was something I was worried about, is because there's so many characters in it. I mean, we're talking about all the Avengers plus some new ones as well. Could it juggle all those characters and remain coherent and enjoyable? And they actually do a really, really good job of juggling all these characters whilst, you know, retaining a coherent plot and an enjoyable story. And it was never going to be an easy job to make this film. I thought they delivered it in spades. I think the directors have done a fantastic job. The action scenes are great. The effects are superb. The performances are across the board excellent. Particular mention has to go to Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans, who basically, you know, carry the film as the two main protagonists. And I think it absolutely nails it. I think it's going to be a massive success, obviously. It's a damn sight better than Avengers Age of Ultron, where I think, unfortunately, Joss Whedon, either he dropped the ball or whether it was because of studio interference, but I don't think that worked so well. I think the villain in this one is better in the sense that I think he has better motivation, and what he does is more interesting than some of the other Marvel villains. And overall, I think it's definitely one of the top two or three Marvel movies so far. It delivers everything you would hope it was going to deliver and more, I think. And there's some really nice surprises in there. I don't want to ruin too much, so I won't say too much about that. But certain things, I think they really, really handled well. And go and see it. You'll be really, if you're a Marvel fan, clearly you're going to go and see it. Obviously, you have to sit right through to the very end of the credits. The reason why I was back late last night, because there's two credits, the one credit post-credit sequence just after the initial credits, and there's one right at the very end as well. Stay for that. It's really good. Both of them setting up upcoming Marvel movies involving the two new characters. And I think it's superb. So go and see it. I give it a 9 out of a solid, very, very, very good 9 out of 10 from me for Captain America Civil War.
Well, I'm still not going to the cinema, but thanks, Steve. That's really good.
Me neither.
Cinema on a bank holiday weekend. Good God.
Well, when it's snowing and freezing cold, that's a good idea to me.
Well, no, so everyone else is also going to the cinema searching for indoor activities. Not a chance.
You should have seen last night's crowd. A midnight screening of a comic book film. It was, it's to say the least, geeky.
Yeah. Was anyone in costume?
No, thankfully no one was in costume.
You should be thankful for small mercies then, I suppose. I don't know. I'm sure it's wonderful. I haven't got around to watching Winter Soldier yet or Age of Ultron. I'll get around to it, I'm sure. So
watch Winter Soldier. That's a really, really told good film.
Look, I've got bloody loads to do. And the thing is also, I appreciate when you said that you can get through these things as it also constitutes work. The nature of the stuff I'm reviewing at the moment, it doesn't. So
I've got the same work. It's just that I'm doing little projectors at the minute and I don't really want to watch big films.
Don't want to watch the good stuff.
No, I don't want to watch the good stuff on that.
Star Wars. Oh, you did watch Star Wars though, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I got around to it. I actually set the reference system up on Saturday. I quickly filmed the projector so I could get rid of it and then set the system at 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night. I finished shooting the videos. And I thought, right, I'm going to set this up and set it all up again. And sat down and watched it. And then I watched some of the extras as well. So it was about 4 a.m. I got to my bed.
How do you feel?
In terms of soundtrack, absolute reference quality. It sounded amazing. And I was using a Yamaha 3050 with the M&K MP300s at the front and the S300Ts at the side. Two big X12 subwoofers at the front of the room. And then I've got two other subs at the back of the room. All set up correctly. No EQ. Don't like the Yamaha has EQ anyway. Sounded amazing. Absolutely brilliant soundtrack. Fantastic. And being able to pick up stuff during the dream sequence again and pick up the voices in there and what was going on and so on. And picture quality looked beautiful on the JVC. It really did. Mm. I mean, it's obviously shot 35mm and IMAX. I mean, you could tell the IMAX shots. But still, 35mm transferred onto that. Oh, it just looked beautiful. Really did. It looked really nice. I couldn't fault the video or sound in any way.
Yeah, me neither. And I don't really understand some of the complaints I've read on the feedback threads of the two Blu-ray reviews, except people, I guess, have different expectations these days. A lot of people are so used to watching films shot on digital that they expect everything to look like that now. I actually prefer the look of film. So when I do see a film that's a movie that's shot on film, on 35mm, or is shot digitally, but like some of the David Fincher stuff where he does make it try and look more like film. I prefer that look personally. I don't mean lobbing loads of excessive grain onto a digital image to try and make it. You know, sometimes they go a bit too far. And if you look at things like Mad Max Fury Road, that's a fairly grainy image, or Daredevil, the Netflix series, where they really ramp up the grain. It's a bit excessive. But on Star Wars, you know, it's a lovely, natural film-like image. I thought was gorgeous, and I think the soundtrack is, I described it, I think, to you fellas, nuanced. I think it's a wonderful soundtrack, and I don't understand all the hate it's been getting.
I don't understand it. Sound wise, it's subjective, and everybody's listening on different systems and all the rest of it, and gonna have preferences and so on, fair enough. Video side, like I say, I mean, it was shot in 35 and IMAX. You can tell the difference between the two. You can tell what was shot and what, but just looks really, really nice. Really nice. And it's still nice to see that filmic look as well. Mm. Yeah, totally.
For films opening this Friday, we've got Knight of Cups, which is a new film from Terrence Malick, who suddenly got really prolific after doing nothing for 20-odd years. And also Bad Neighbours 2, sequel to obviously to Bad Neighbours, with Seth Rogen and... what's his name?
Zac Efron.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
And then it's got Seth. Chloe Grace Moretz lady in it as well.
Yes, it's a sequel to Bad Neighbours, which was about a couple, Seth Rogen and his wife, who was played by, I've forgotten the name now.
I quite enjoyed the first one. I had no expectations. And I would, again, given that I can't be asked to go to the cinema to watch a Marvel event movie, I sure as hell wouldn't be going anywhere near the cinema for this. But I imagine I will catch it on demand or whatever as and when it's rumble through to that point.
It's Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne, and they're a couple who buy a house. Unfortunately, they have a fraternity living next door. That's the first film, and the fraternity is run by Zac Efron. In this film, they're trying to sell their house, and a girl fraternity have moved next door, and they get Zac Efron in to help them try and get rid of the girl fraternity.
Yeah, sounds enthralling. Blu-ray releases, what can we go out and buy?
This week, you can buy In the Heart of the Sea, the Ron Howard movie about the apparently true story on which Moby Dick is based. So clearly a bloke hunting a massive whale. I haven't seen it, actually. It didn't do particularly well at the box office. Unfortunately, it came out the week before Star Wars did, so it got murdered, basically. But it looks impressive technically, so I'm sure it'll be a great disc. And also, Akira Kurosawa's Run is getting a re-release on Blu-ray this week.
And for Mr. Hodges' benefit, what can he go and buy on Ultra HD Blu-ray?
Yeah, for the Ultra HD Blu-ray snobs out there, and that's you, Mark, and me, I think, these days. Well, the news this week basically has been that Sony Pictures have announced their first releases for May. It's the same films that were released at in the US last month. So Amazing Spider-Man 2, Salt, Pineapple Express, Hancock, Chappie, and the Smurfs 2. Now, I'll admit that is not the best lineup of films to be released as an initial slate. What I will say, though, is I'm glad to see that Sony are basically using Dolby Atmos soundtracks on all their Ultra HD Blu-rays so far. And also they're trying wherever possible to use native 4K sources. So, you know, they're definitely going for the best possible quality, which is good. They just need to up the quality of the films they're actually releasing. Some guys have been moaning about, well, you know, it's too late. They're already available in the States and there's no regional coding, so you can just buy them from America. And you can do that, of course. But for people that want to buy them in the UK, they'll start coming out in May. But what was exciting about their press release, they listed some of the other films they've got 4K masters ready to go for. And there's obviously some great titles in there. And one of the ones I know both you and I, Phil, really want, Lawrence of Arabia, which will look absolutely unbelievable on Ultra HD Blu-ray when it finally comes out. But there's some good titles in there. There are some announcements already being made for future releases, at least in the States. I'm not sure about the UK, but Ghostbusters 1 and 2 are coming out in June. And bizarrely, in September, we get a 30th anniversary Ultra HD Blu-ray release with the Dolby Atmos soundtrack of Labyrinth. So who saw that coming? And I should just point out, I mentioned last week that Independence Day was going to be the first immersive audio release from Fox. I was slightly wrong on that front. Actually, the Peanuts movie had a Dolby Atmos soundtrack. Why, God knows, but that was their first Dolby Atmos soundtrack release. Independence Day has a DTSX soundtrack, should be their first DTSX soundtrack release. And perhaps more exciting for me, on the 10th of May in the US, Deadpool comes out on Ultra HD Blu-ray from Fox, and that's going to have a Dolby Atmos soundtrack. So,
seen The Revenant yet?
No. I haven't had a chance yet.
What? This is a guy that watches a whole season of Game of Thrones.
Well, last night, wasn't I?
Yeah, but there's more nights in the week than just last night.
Well, I only put it on Wednesday afternoon.
Right, okay. We'll talk about that next week,
then,
will we?
Save that for next week.
Right, okay, fine. Well, we're actually blown right the way through our time on this podcast, so my thanks to Steve Withers.
I know a guy.
Mark Hodgkinson.
Nailed it.
And Ed Selly.
That is one messed up looking dog.
Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, bookmark AV forums for latest reviews, news and video. And why not go and leave us 5 stars on iTunes, and we'll read you out at the start of the next podcast, at the start of the next month, and we won't forget, we promise. I'm Phil Hinton, thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you again next Monday.